This is URN.
Hello and welcome to The Culture Show. You are joined by Ellie and Mel.
Good afternoon.
And the time is 5:05. We're joined in the studios today by Kira, Freya and Beth. I'm just going to have to figure out what microphones they are to turn them up, so we're just going to turn them all up. But hi guys, welcome.
Hi.
We've got quite an exciting show today, haven't we?
We do indeed.
Had a pretty cute interview with, well, I don't know if cute is the right word, but an interview with Jem Bloomfield, Professor of English at the University, all about his articles, which were Knee Socks and Librarians and
Lad Culture.
The way it is, yeah. Mm. So we're going to start off by playing the first half of this interview, and then after that, we'll go into a song. It's quite a long interview, but it's obviously really interesting content, so we'll take it away. So we are Ellie and Mel, and we are joined here by Jem, here to talk about his articles, Knee Socks and Libraries and the Way It Is, Lad Culture at British Universities. To begin with, please, could you explain what your two articles are about?
Certainly. I wrote them a few years ago, so I might be a little bit dubious on details. I was struck by the discussions that had been happening around the issue of sexism on campus, the way we talk about education, the way we talk about women, the way women are commodified or objectified in public culture, and specifically, obviously, in a university setting, because that's where I work and where I spend a lot of my time, how that impacts, as I see, upon people's lives and people's sort of interactions with each other. So the Way It Is article was prompted by a study that I think the University of Sussex was doing, which was involved with the NUS, and talking about what they had roughly defined as lad culture, yeah. Which is, I suspect, is probably an outdated term now. It's about five years ago.
Still,
oh, right, that's still used.
Yeah.
Right. This idea that despite excellent policies by many universities in terms of sort of discrimination and diversity and not officially putting up with sexism or forms of marginalisation, whatever policies you had in place, and they're good and necessary, there is a sort of cultural issue. There is a way in which people interact, assumptions that they make. I suppose we might even call the sort of civic culture of the university has an enormous impact upon people's lives, particularly in a learning situation where you're already pretty sort of intellectually and emotionally vulnerable. You're having to admit there's a lot of stuff you don't know. You're having to sort of work out, particularly if you're a younger undergraduate, who you are, where you are in the world. And there's all these forces and all these effects that are sort of shaping your vision of the world and the way other people see you. Mm-hmm. The second piece, which was rather more focused, was the one entitled Knee Socks and Librarians, I think it was, mm-hmm. Which was about the way in which images of particularly women connected to education are trivialised or manipulated. The two examples in the title are the rather depressing spectacle, I should say, of new undergraduates arriving at university, and the first club night that they were invited to was a school disco, where the female undergraduates are encouraged to dress up like sexy schoolgirls. You can't see the inverted commas, but I'm doing inverted commas with my fingers. In a way that was both demeaning and I found faintly sinister, in that the first thing that they are told when they are introduced to an institution that can potentially change their life, yeah. Is look younger, look more vulnerable, be here for your sexuality, and that sexuality is best expressed through passivity, vulnerability and the potential for other people to manipulate and enjoy you, which struck me as an unbelievably retrograde notion in someone's first week at university.
Yeah. And would you consider the two articles to be similar? Because that on Twitter, you replied to the Lad Culture one, which I think is slightly older, mm-hmm. with the second one, the Knee Socks and Librarians. So would you see them as similar articles?
I think so. I think they more or less tackled different aspects of the same situation. I'm not a sociologist, and neither am I, in fact, someone who works academically on gender studies. We have people, as you know, like Lucy Jones in the department, who writes very illuminatingly and researches issues of gender and language, and we have someone like Judith in the medieval section, who writes about gender and Vikings and history. Gender is not my academic speciality, so I don't claim any particular special sort of insight or professionalism in this one, but I think they do approach the same issue, let's say, from slightly different points of view.
Yeah. We were also wondering how you see sexism as a man, mm-hmm. and if, when you see maybe female friends being objectified or things like that, how you react and how you feel about it.
I suppose the first answer to how I see sexism as a man is not nearly enough, or not nearly as much as my female peers and friends do. I remember when I was an undergraduate, I'd had lunch with a female friend, and we were talking about going off to different research libraries after lunch, and I said something about where she'd take her bike home first, and she said, no, you don't cycle to that library in summertime. And I said, what? And she said, no, like generally understood amongst her female friends, it's not worth the hassle, you know, running the gauntlet of catcalls and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. She says, I just don't cycle there. And I thought, well, but that's going to add half an hour to your day. Mm-hmm. That there is a, you know, it's practically Marxist, right? There is a physical condition put upon the production of knowledge by a female academic that just wasn't put on me, and which I had never had to consider. Mm-hmm. That street, to me, was a, you know, rather pleasant bit of sandstone. It had never occurred to me that someone else was navigating it in a... you know, I'm not saying she was, you know, neurotic or continually afraid, but she had pressures that I was simply not aware of.
Yeah. I think we still experience that. I mean, for example, if I had to go for a run or something like that, I wouldn't go in the evenings or really early in the morning. You have to kind of work your way around the kind of culture.
And I think especially, like, being out late at night, my mum would say to me, don't travel, don't go around by yourself, and, like, make sure you text me when you get home. Mm. And that kind of thing that perhaps...
men don't have to think about as much.
As much, yeah.
Yes, there was a the example, actually, again, of a female friend who's an academic over in Cambridge. And we were telling, you know, stories about foolish exploits and silly things we had definitely not done as undergraduates. one of which was that there was a... I think they were a... I don't think they were a sports team, but there was some social group had gone out, and the chaps had tied labels around their necks saying, if found, please return to, you know, the lodge at X College, which, you know, which was a way of them declaring their intention to get pretty blotto. And she said, this is like a different world. The idea that you would purposefully announce your intention to get vulnerable and expect the person to find you, their first thought to be, oh, I must get this person to a place of safety. You know, that she's a different world.
Yeah, 100%. So how would your experiences compare from when you were a student to today as a lecturer and authority figure? Like,
that's a very good question, although I'm obviously going to quibble at authority figure. I suppose, first of all, I rather like your last question, I don't see a lot of it. There's an awful lot that I'm assuming and projecting, both as a bloke and as someone who isn't an undergraduate anymore. Mm. So I suppose I'm assuming a lot, and I suspect there's a tendency as you get a little bit older and as you get a little bit further away from student life to see university as, in one sense, rather more civilised. We tend to see people, if not on their best behaviour, certainly in quite a professional setting. It's quite easy, I think, to sit back and think, well, people don't say misogynist things in my seminar room, you know, and you know, people are polite to each other in my lectures, and you don't see the things that people aren't saying. So that might be, you know, people who would express misogynist views, but not in front of you. Or alternatively, you're not seeing the things that female students might have wanted to say, but felt somewhat hemmed in, or were just, you know, worn down after a long day of getting from the seminar room to home and to the lecture theatre. So I feel that there is an awful lot that I don't see. What I suppose you do see as a lecturer is the policy side of things. You see the attempts to try and build some sort of scaffolding within which a healthier culture can thrive. Mm-hmm. But again, that's, you know, that is very frequently up to student groups or the NUS or you know, organisations that we interact with and discuss things with, but which we aren't the driving force of.
Yeah. Did you experience, as a student, when you were a student, at that perspective, did you think that you saw more of it then?
More than now?
Yeah.
So do you mean, was there more of it, or did I see more of it?
Well, did you see more of it?
Oh, yes, absolutely vile. Yes, it was... as an undergraduate, you saw a lot more casual misogyny, lot more...
You're more immersed in the culture, aren't you?
That's a good... Yes, exactly that, yeah.
So there's a time difference between the articles. Would you say there was a pronounced change that spurred you to write the second article? It was
more that I sort of managed to get what I'd been thinking about. As I say, given what we've been saying, I'm not sure whether things have been spiking or coming to a head or whatever. But it was more that I tried to work out what exactly it was that bothered me about that, seeing those club night flyers or whatever. So that was why I wrote the second piece.
Yeah. So do you? I mean, it's a bit of a difficult question to answer, but do you think that it, like sexualisation of women, has got any worse or better in recent years, and lad culture as well?
Yes, it is a difficult question. It is one of those problems, isn't it, where you don't know whether it's a good thing that it seems to be more of a problem because people are reporting it and people are talking about it, and in fact we're now not accepting it as, all the time not accepting it as absolutely standard, or whether the increase of commodification and marketisation of young women as like commercial objects, whether that is more prevalent than it was. I mean, I don't know how many hot takes there were over the death of Hugh Hefner recently, but someone who knew the history of the sort of sociology of that would be able to answer. Mm-hmm. It's really the data point that springs to mind is the sort of collapse of the 1990s lads mags, Nuts and Zoo and magazines like that. And again, people have argued that sort of laddish sort of, breast and gadgets magazine is much less acceptable than it was, or alternatively that you don't need to buy it, that the internet has essentially rendered that as a sort of a publishing article that someone needs to go and find completely irrelevant because it's, swishing around on Twitter, it's swishing around on the internet. I don't know. Mm.
And going back to the idea of being young and more attractive and that sort of thing, so obviously the back-to-school theme, which is quite prevalent in Freshers' Week, where women, are kind of forced by society to look more powerless or vulnerable, how far do you think this extends to men in society when they're, for example, in themed nights out or things like that?
From what I've seen, it doesn't extend nearly as much. Yeah. So there was a few years ago at, I believe it was Nottingham University, I'd have to check my notes, there was a club night that was called CEOs and Corporate Hoes. Mm. And that was an absolute textbook case where
I was actually invited to a party
Were you?
This weekend with that title.
So it hasn't changed.
Still hasn't changed.
Where that is explicitly saying someone with a load of wealth and power who is literally paying the salary of the other person in this fantasy situation. Yeah. I don't think the history of the concept of schoolboy in our culture, or indeed, the culture that it draws on, so the 19th century literature, Tom Brown's School Days, or schoolboys in classical literature. I don't think that is. I mean, there are bits of Plato's Symposium where people are quite keen on young nubile schoolboys, but I don't think there is at all the same implication of schoolboy to mean consumable, vulnerable, inherently sexual. I mean, you talk about someone making a schoolboy error. It implies, perhaps it implies foolishness or naivete, but it doesn't mean the same sort of thing culturally.
So with the whole...
This is URN.
So that was Maria Maria by Santana. Welcome back to the Culture Show. We just played the first half of our interview with Jen Bloomfield on his articles, and we're just having a little...
We are just having a little chat, and if you're interested, please message us on 07903 545 252, or send us a free web text on www.urn1350.net if you have any ideas or interesting points
or any questions. We're all ears here in the studio. We have been having interesting conversations about it already, so it's going to be a good second half of the show. But on that note, we're going to go into the second half of the interview with Jen Bloomfield.
I mean, the same sort of thing, culture.
So with the whole, another title is like pimps and hoes. Mm. How do you think that flips the sexualisation of a man then? Because although it is maybe not as much, but it could be interesting to think of it, of males being painted as a sexual creature in that way, which, I don't know, they might not necessarily... want to be like that. So how do you think?
I'd slightly take issue with the idea that pimps and hoes are equivalent categories there, because to me, one of those categories is someone who's being sexually exploited and the other category is someone who's doing the exploiting. A pimp, if I understand it correctly, in our culture is not someone who is a pin-up. But you know, that aside, yes, it's not pleasant to be sexualized against your will in whatever gender you are. I just don't think it happens. My experience is not nearly so much as it happens to women. And indeed, you know, when I was an undergraduate, I used to sort of read in the corner of pubs and things, and you know, you occasionally used to get rowdy young women out in a pack for a good time, you know. And so, you know, if you got you know, catcalled or you know, sort of joshed a bit at the bar, but of course, I was irritated by that, and it, you know, I felt it was a slight on my dignity, and I was cross. But I didn't worry about walking home, and yeah, I didn't change my route. I didn't call a friend or ask for a taxi. Like, you know, yeah, I thought they were rude and, you know, and unpleasant, but I didn't feel threatened by them.
Yeah. Mm. And do you think sexualizing educated women happens because they are educated, mm, or because people are trying to reduce them or repress them, if that makes sense?
I think that those are very connected points.
Yeah.
Again, I can only speak from my own experience, but you know, one of the bedrock pieces of casual, ironic, again, you know, inverted commas, sexist banter that one used to come across was "get back in the kitchen." You know, this was said to women as a, you know, sort of a piece of faux ironic joking, which is, you know, it's literally a reference to the gender norms of a previous generation, or the imagined gender norms of a previous generation. Mm. I think there is a certain amount. Jude Gosling and Rosemary Auchmuty have written about this in fiction about schoolgirls, actually, the way in which, as you suggested, the idea of an educated woman is reduced to a sort of sexual fantasy or a cipher in order to put them back in the sex class, I suppose, as a second wave feminist would say, to remind them they are not part of the intellectual class or the producer class, or, you know, my Marxism is a bit rusty, but that they are a member of the sex class, that they are a done to rather than a doer, they are an object rather than a subject.
Yeah. So along the same lines, like female roles in the workplace, you spoke about how nurses and teachers are sexualized and objectified, but it could be argued that you wouldn't sexualize a female doctor. So is it because it's a subordinate role, like a nurse and a teacher, which then comes back to the power debate? Do you think that's why?
I think there's a lot in there, yeah. Part of that, from the specific example you give, part of that might well be that doctor has so long been associated with men, mm-hmm, that it's not seen as a logically female or necessarily female role. I think certainly with nurses there is a very queasy equation of manual labour for someone, you know, care work basically,
yeah,
with sex. With vulnerability, economic vulnerability, you know, physical vulnerability, the idea that someone who tends to you physically is somehow then, you know, going to be a sex worker. The teacher thing, I think, is possibly slightly different. I think it does speak very much to what you were saying, Mel, about the reduction of authority figures. I think there's also something there about emotional labour, and you know, someone who's a figure who teaches you and is patient with you and sort of nurtures you, and again that rather like care work then becomes very ickily conflated with sexuality. The idea that, you know, women who take on emotional labour and do physical labour, that somehow is akin to sex.
Mm-hmm. And the idea or the notion of feminism as a whole, do you feel it's quite a sensationalist or a sweeping sensation sort of thing? Because it's quite in fashion at the moment. Mm. You even see it in fashion. We were in Topshop the other day and there was a T-shirt saying the future is female. Mm. Which I found it a little bit too much in the face. You know what I mean? I feel like feminism should be equality. Yeah. For all, not women overpowering men or anything like that, just, you know, having equal rights. I don't know what you think on this subject.
I'm afraid I'm going to hedge my bets rather disgracefully by saying, A, it's not up to me. That one is up to you. You know, feminism is, as I understand it, the movement for women's liberation. And so it's for women to decide it. But unfortunately, of course, in answering that, I have slightly offered my own definition of feminism, which is that, Equality is terrific, and equality is something that we should all strive for. But we are in there is a system of power relations here. There is one group that has historically had more power and more control, and has enforced it with violence and social sanctions. I'm not sure that we can address that and get to equality without it being seen as a liberation movement rather than simply a sort of squaring off of present conditions.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, it could possibly be argued that whether it actually does help the movement. We were talking about whether whether it helps if the women who are making it are in sweatshops, that kind of, it's whether it's feminism is playing devil's advocate a little bit, but whether it's gone too far, I don't know what your opinion is on that.
I'm not sure too far is what I'd say, but I would certainly agree that if we have a situation where, as you say, feminism is being made into a brand, the theologian Tandeka has some very interesting stuff on what she calls feminism ink, this idea of taking feminism as a liberation movement and then selling it as a brand, particularly to companies. If we have a situation in which that is happening off the back of exploited women in other countries, I don't think that's evidence that feminism's gone too far, but evidence that it hasn't gone far enough, that it's not representing those women, and it's not, it's not seeking their liberation as well.
I feel like the definition of feminism has been confused, though, because I feel like some people in society see it as women gaining power and over men, or some people see it as equality, and I feel like there's so many different views and opinions, and men may see it as women trying to gain superiority, whereas some women are saying, no, we just want equality. I feel like that needs to be defined and kind of solidified in society, what we're actually trying to gain here.
Yes, I mean, I think any loss of privilege or any long enough historical situation where you've had more power will feel like someone trying to get one over on you when they're seeking equality. I think there's a real danger. We see it, in fact, in some politics in America at the moment, where there are movements for liberation that are being seen as an attempt to take over or an attempt to gain the whip hand of another group.
I think Emma Watson's He for She campaign kind of tried to define it, but there's still lots of... it is quite a contested kind of debate, isn't it?
I mean, my idea of feminism is Emma Watson's idea of feminism.
I guess the power of feminism is, though, that you can define it for yourself.
Yeah.
The same with, religion and that kind of...
Yeah, it's very subjective.
...area, yeah. But going back to the questions, what kind of does the mainstream... or how does the mainstream face of feminism relate to women and men as well and their everyday struggles... which is also linked to the idea of the working in the sweatshops. Do you think it is relevant to everyday struggles, and does it really help?
Yes, I mean this. I think that opens up a lot of the questions that you've sort of been tackling there as to what feminism is, whether it's a set of principles, whether it's a historical set of movements that we often look at in waves, whether it is simply the recognition and struggle against imposed gender norms and inequalities. I'm somewhat out of touch, I must admit, with what you've called sort of mainstream feminist sort of the face of the movement. But I think that any situation in which people are troubled by gender inequalities, any situation in which they are trying to negotiate their lives in this deeply unjust and entrenched system, is a situation in which feminism has something to say, whatever feminism might be in its essence.
There was an interesting article we read this morning, actually, about this 20-year-old student in Amsterdam. I don't know if you've heard about it. She's called Noah Jansma, was it?
Yeah.
And she's basically been taking selfies with all these catcallers.
Oh, right.
And they unknowingly are just, taking the selfie.
Yeah, she... for a month, she was part of a project she was doing, because they're making catcalling illegal in Holland currently. And she would, every time that she'd be catcalled, she would take the selfie.
Oh, right.
And the men would just... in every photo, she's having this straight face and she looks quite upset, and all the men are kind of leering and smiling, and it's like they don't realise... the
impact
yeah. and the kind of issue at stake. Which is
we
quite
thought that highlighted the everyday
issue
that we need to face. Really.
Because it is, I mean, like you said, it being contested.
Yeah.
lots of people don't actually know what feminism is, and, yeah. and
for don't know what is acceptable and what the line is as well.
Exactly.
I think a lot of people have different ideas, and it is difficult to get a whole society or a whole culture on the same page.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And this question of line is interesting, isn't it? Since when people object to things like catcalling or let's take that as an example. That's a good example. There are always comments under internet pieces saying things like, "Oh, you know, the human rights will die out if people aren't people of different genders can't talk to each other." I see now, or throw you in jail for trying to find a girlfriend or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because I have never heard of anyone who was catcalled and turned around and said, "Oh, go on then, let's have a date." You know, or "I'd like to get to know you better." Yeah. It just doesn't seem to be an attempt to strike up, you know, even a brief and meaningless, you know, sexual liaison with someone. Yeah. It seems much more like an attempt to remind women that the public space is owned by someone else.
Yeah.
It seems much more like a way of putting people in their place.
Yeah.
And it is terrifying in our culture that For in that example, violence and sexuality are almost indistinguishable.
Yeah.
That using, commenting on women sexually or expressing something sexually is a form of violence.
Yeah.
And that we're very bad in our culture. The classic example perhaps being that Robin Thicke achieving Blurred Lines.
Oh, of course.
You look at the lyrics of that. That song can't tell the difference between violence and sex.
Yeah.
You know, it talks about having sex in a way that is explicitly designed to damage the woman.
Yeah.
Mm.
That is, I think, a real problem in where our society has got to. It's sort of conceptualization of even what sex is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all about defining, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's our conclusion.
Yes. Good scholars, we will define our terms before we begin.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you
today.
Very much.
It's been a very interesting conversation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is
University
Radio Nottingham.
39. Hope you're still intrigued and listening in.
Yes.
After that very long interview.
That was a very long but a very interesting interview. So, as we said at the beginning of the show, we are joined by three lovely ladies in this studio. We've got Beth.
Hi.
Freya.
Hiya.
And Kira.
Hey.
So just to start off with, guys, what were your, like, standout moments from the interview, from the topic?
Yeah.
What is kind of your main point that you can take away from what you
Should
just heard?
Should we start with Beth?
Yeah.
There you go.
I think for me it was more that it definitely came from, like, a academic male perspective.
Yeah.
And that the way he discussed that, there were so many different brands of feminism. I thought that was really interesting, especially to know his.
Yeah.
And then we were discussing as well, obviously, that there's so many different, and we all have, like, personal opinions of feminism. So. Yeah.
What about you guys, Freya?
In terms of, like, the actual articles, I found it quite interesting that he was discussing things like how sexually there's this idea of making women younger with the whole, like, lollipops and knee socks, and what that actually tells us about our relationship to women sexually.
Yeah, 100%.
And I was sort of thinking about one of the articles was sort of alluding to the idea that boys will be boys, and how even at university we kind of encourage this idea, we accept things, we say that's the way it is, and we teach freshers that.
Mm. No, definitely. So yeah, then we've got everyone's standing points, viewpoints. So what were your most important, do you think, from
Mel, what was your...
What was mine?
Yeah.
I think, to be honest, we have to deal with the everyday issue and what the line is with feminism. I think all the catcalling and, you know, as I mentioned in the interview, going out late at night or going for a run, just daily things that you kind of feel more uncomfortable doing as a woman.
Mm.
Not saying that men don't have to deal with it, obviously. There is that definitely that goes on, but obviously it's more prevalent amongst women. What about you, Ellie?
Well... I found it interesting the fact that Jem was a man and he was writing these articles.
Yep.
In fact, we've had somebody texting in saying, where's the male guest on this show? Well, that is actually a very fair point, because I think it's just as valid for men to talk about this as women.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that it could be argued, playing a bit of devil's advocate, that perhaps Jem might have been taken more seriously in his article because he was a man. If a woman had written this article, then maybe somebody might have dismissed it as
extremist.
Maybe not extremist, but like, I don't know, man-hating or like...
Being dramatic about
it. I think we want to highlight that before we go any further. We're not man-haters or anything. No. We just want to have just a debate. I know this is... I don't know if it's overdone. Obviously, it has been very explored. In recent years.
Yeah, I would say that feminism is becoming more part of popular culture.
Yeah.
Which personally is a good thing, but I think it's a good thing, but it could be said that it needs to be brought in even more for change to actually happen.
So, Beth had some interesting points. What did you pick up first about your learning history? So should we have a few anecdotes, basically, from all of you guys?
Well, this is like mine and Kira's. So we had an experience this year with one of our seminar groups that our seminar leader only learned like the boys' names in our group and put them as the leaders within our groups.
And he said to us when he was like putting them into groups, oh, we'll make sure there's a boy in every group. And at the time, I don't think we really questioned it.
No, we really didn't.
But now thinking about it, it's like, why did we need that? That wasn't necessary.
But I mean, that can happen anywhere, really, can't it? Not just with this specific example. Like, you do see, as Jem was saying, perhaps more as a female than as a male, you can experience sexism or not even sexism, but kind of slights on women. You see it more as a woman than you do as a man.
Yeah.
You just sort of, it kind of, when you reflect on it, it sort of seems like they're kind of valued more, like they could say the same thing, but will be listened to more. Kind of like what you said about Jem's articles possibly being taken more seriously because he's a man. I feel like it's the same sort of thing, like, not to be mean about anyone in our group, obviously, but the boys weren't necessarily the hardest working ones. It doesn't mean they were or they weren't, but there's no reason for it.
It seemed as almost like they added more value to each group.
Yeah,
but it could be argued the other way, that perhaps he was trying to split up the boys because they thought they were going to be disruptive, and that could be seen as, going against boys in the group.
Yeah,
because maybe the girls are more reliable, but the issue is that
it comes down to preconceptions, I think, doesn't it? Our ideas of how girls and boys work, and our ideas about how they can integrate together.
Definitely.
Interesting. Any more anecdotes
within like the university?
In general, outside university as well.
We spoke, didn't we, about how it might be kind of a bit not worrying, but walking down the street at night when it's dark, it is something that you'd think about more as a young girl, worrying about it rather than as a boy.
That's what I would worry about the most.
Me too.
Feel like at university I haven't experienced any particular sexist, you know, events or anything like that. I don't feel repressed as a female. I feel like we have a lot of opportunities and we're on the verge of being equal. I do agree, but there are still things that can be improved and still need to be talked about.
But it kind of depends on the
It does.
Because this is the thing with feminism as well, if we're talking about feminism, is that like it's not just one brand of woman, if you like. There's so many different women. They all have different issues, and I think it's a shame because some of us, I'm sure, are coming towards being equal, and then some of us are probably getting further away. And how do we kind of tackle everyone's issues at the same time?
Yeah, it's interesting.
How can there be like one feminism when we have
a lot of women.
That's the thing, isn't it? Because you can't make one set rule for everybody. Each woman is unique and each woman needs her own interpretation.
This is what I was saying in the interview. It's so subjective and there's so many different lines of what feminism is and people see it in different ways. People think catcalling is acceptable. Other people think, no, that's completely out of line. How can you get everyone on the same page?
I do think there's like an issue within like women to women relationships for women who like, say someone doesn't particularly feel offended by catcalling, is then like, oh, well, why should anyone? And we need to understand that everyone has different experiences and not dismiss each other's own personal issues with it.
Yeah, I think on that note.
University.
This is
University
Radio
Nottingham.
So that was an interesting remix of A Laurel.
I did think that was the original, guys. I do apologise, but well, some of you may have enjoyed it.
That's a nice bit of remix culture from
a different culture.
Yeah. So we've only got 10 minutes left of the show, but we were talking a little bit during that song about Jem's points in his articles to do with women being made into schoolgirls and that sexualizing them. So, and kind of belittling them in a way. So what do you guys think? Is there a real difference between schoolgirls and like being in sixth form and being underage and first year university students? Where is the cutoff point? Because when you come to university, you're almost seen as, you are seen as an adult. So where is that point? And is there a point there?
I think I found it interesting because when I first came to uni, I probably felt younger than I had in a long time.
Yeah, that's what I was
saying. I felt a lot more vulnerable than I had in a long time. And it, obviously there's the law and that's pretty obvious. You're underage, you're under 18, you're a schoolgirl, but I'm not sure what it is about. I think it might be about the power relations kind of thing, especially schoolgirls are young, they're innocent apparently, and maybe as soon as women get into higher education, they're suddenly considered to be somehow more capable, and that's somehow a problem. I don't know.
I feel like you go from being at school and being confident and knowing where you are and where you stand, and then you come into university and you're looking for your place to be, and that kind of creates sort of like a power imbalance because you already sort of feel vulnerable, and maybe that's part of the issue.
Yeah, because I guess unless you do a life-changing gap year, I wouldn't say that my maturity levels changed in those 10 weeks of summer between sick form and in fact, I, like you say, I think I felt more,
I think you feel more anxious,
yeah, because it is a completely, I mean, we've all, I mean, most of us have come quite fast to come to university and so you're in a completely new environment. I mean,
yeah,
it's just a completely different,
yeah. And also the other interesting point that Jem made was it's kind of depressing as well to think that we're using schoolgirls as a theme. It's kind of verging on paedophilia. I don't know. Wouldn't
no,
you say?
I think that. Yeah.
It is,
I just think the fact that you're going as a young girl in pigtails and high socks.
It is all to do with the power, isn't it?
Because and it's not questioned, is it, really?
No.
Which is quite worrying.
But I mean, even now in my head, I'm a little bit like, oh, well, it's just dress up. It's just for fun. But you do, like, you can.
And it can be fun. It can, you know, that's not to say that people shouldn't be going to these events. I'm sure a lot of us have been to these events.
Yeah,
it's just maybe if we look deeper into it, why are these events a thing?
Because I never really thought about it. I mean, in freshers I went to the back to school event,
and
the thought didn't even cross my mind.
I got freshers
blue,
so I didn't.
I do think though it sort of almost reflects how we feel the most of the time when we're clubbing, because I've had like friends that are guys have been like, yeah, I wouldn't want to be a girl clubbing because they know what it's like and they know how girls can be treated, not all the time and not by everyone, but they can be treated like that, and actually having those costumes on doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't happen the rest of the time as well.
It does make it makes you more vulnerable, but like you say, you are vulnerable.
Yeah, I feel like wearing the costume can almost feel like it's not going to happen to you at that point because you're acknowledging it, whereas it happens a lot of the other time. It can happen other times as well.
Yeah, that's true. So one final question before we end. Do you think, because we've only had at university one experience of being here at Nottingham, so do you think that perhaps if you went to a school like a university like Oxbridge or an ex-poly, like how would you think that your experiences would differ? I mean, it's hard to say, but
from visiting friends and things like that. Have any of you visited any friends?
I've been to Leeds.
I've been to a few, and I would say that I can't speak for Oxbridge. Like, I have, I know people at Oxbridge, and I think the experience is a little different for various reasons, partially because of the intensity of the course and stuff like that. I don't, I feel like every uni has its own culture. As Jem was saying in one of his articles, he said that people become proud of their university culture.
Yeah.
But I think across universities, there's probably a different way of dealing with things. But then across our society, we have quite a uniform reaction to any kind of question about our sexuality and stuff like that, and about how we treat people and women.
Mm. Yeah, I do think also, like, in terms of the schoolgirl thing, that probably happens at a lot of universities. I don't think that's, like, a specific, you know, we're not the only university who's had that event. And we're not the only university who has issues with that kind of thing. I'm pretty sure all universities do.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Does anyone have any final thoughts before we round up?
There was an interesting question. I don't know if we should bring it up. It might end up going on for ages, but... is equal pay the best way to define equality? We had a little bit of a chat about this.
Yeah.
I mean...
That's such a big question.
Freya's huffing.
So I don't know, man.
I mean, I would like to be paid equally, but I guess it goes deeper than that, doesn't it?
It does
it's not just about money.
I feel like it's more the society than the money. The society is at the
It's the ideals,
issue.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's how you're treated.
I think you could be paid equally and still be treated very differently. Yeah. Like, there are definitely examples of that. And in the same sense, there can be women who are bosses and managers and still aren't treated as respectfully as, like, their employees at some... Like, you know, there's that thing where people will be like, can I speak to your manager? If it's a woman, they'll assume it's not the manager.
Mm.
That's like, I feel like you could be being paid more even and still not have the respect.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was the question we had messaged in on the...
It was like, what about women using their sexuality in the workplace?
It's quite different because there's at every stage of life there's something you have to deal with, isn't it? There's school,
because you adapt to survive.
You have to adapt to survive.
Yeah. But I think we'll have more on that maybe another week. We'll get you guys in again to have a chat about it, because I think it's one of those topics that you can just go on forever about. It's so it is interesting.
I definitely can.
But our final song of the day of the show is going to be The 18 by Ed Sheeran. So thank you everybody for listening, and thank you guys for coming into the studio.
Thanks Jem as well for the great interview.
Yeah, very interesting.
Thank you very much,
Jem. And the articles, great articles.
Keep writing. And we'll keep reading.
We'll read again.
This is The 18.